Chazal tell us that Gadol Talmud, Shemedo De Maisa, a person learns, and then that's going to lead them to do mitzvahs, it's going to lead them to be able to be more medaktik in mitzvahs. So some of you may be wondering, where are the donuts and where's the coffee? So the teretz is that we have a lot of shilas to discuss. In Uchus Kashrus, whether the donuts are kosher, whether the coffee is kosher, not so poshut. So maybe we're matzliach and some of the sugyas in the next couple of weeks, maybe we'll be zeichan, shvachim is a gift, we'll come back to some of the donuts and coffee that we're so used to. So hang in there a little bit, just hold on for a little while. That's not the Rebbe's line, but just hold on for a little bit. When one begins to learn the sugyas of Kashrus, one is almost taken aback by the vastness of the sugya. There's so many different parts of Uchus Kashrus you can spend. Not Sunday mornings for 40 minutes. You can spend a lifetime learning cheshchita, learning ches treifes, and basal cholov, and taroyves, and shalakom, and tefillas kelim, and hafrashes challah, and mitzvah tlis ba'aretz. And there are multiple parts. So hopefully, over the next couple of, I can't say how many years or so, but just to give you a reference point, how long did it take us to do Melachas Shabbos? About 3 years plus or something. So Mitzvah Shem, we have a long, long endeavor ahead of us to try to see how much we can master some of the intricate sugyas, some of the basic halachas that, of course, govern our very lives. So we're always in a quandary when we begin to learn Uchus Kashrus, because it's so vast, where do you begin? So our knee-jerk reaction would be, you begin any of your Adaya Siman Aleph, that would be the best place to start. So the dilemma with starting with your Adaya Siman Aleph is that for most of us urban boys, so Shechita really doesn't speak to us too much. I mean, we don't have too many shailas in Uchus Shechita. We all know we have to eat meat of Shechita, chicken of Shechita, that we're all familiar with. But the intricacies of Uchus Shechita, so except for maybe if you're lucky and you get a Shechita Shechita Kaparis for your Erev Yom Kippur, most of us really don't have too much issues with Shechita proper. So we're going to hold off on your Adei Chelek Aleph in terms of that part. Hilchas Malicha, Hilchas Trefa. So hopefully as things go on, we'll talk a little bit about some of these things, the parts that do touch on us a little bit. A good logical place to begin would be in Hukkas Bas B'cholov. But Hukkas Bas B'cholov is also so vast, I'm afraid that we're going to drown in Bas B'cholov first. So hopefully, Mitzvah Shem will get back to Bas B'cholov, we'll get back to Taroves. But I think that almost the best part, the easiest part to begin is almost your Adei Chelek Beis. It's in areas of halachas that we are a little bit familiar with. We touched upon our lives to a significant amount. We've spoken about these things in the past, at the Shurim. This is the time to really learn the sugyas together, both the Lomdos and in terms of Halacha L'Maisa, to begin the sugyas of Macholi Akum. And Macholi Akum also have a whole group of halachas. There's Bishul Akum, there's Pas Akum, there's Cholav Akum, and Gvinas Akum, and Stam Yeinah. There are a whole series of different areas of Hilchos Kashrus that are impacted by our relationship with our non-Jewish neighbors. Either our neighbors or more likely the people who work in our homes or in our restaurants or our catering establishments. So we're going to begin with the sugyas, the basic sugya of Bishul Akum. That's what we're going to start off with Kashrus today. And as Rabbanim, so maybe in days of old, Rabbanim had a lot of light of Bas B'chol Shailas. We still do get Bas B'chol Shailas, but there are still there are an awful lot of Hilchos Bishul Akum Shailas that do come up. Let's see if we can familiarize ourselves again, as we always tried to do in the past in this slot, with the background, with the lomdos, with the different opinions in the Rishonim, and how it plays out in Shulchan Aruch and contemporary issues that impact our very lives. So the sugya begins with the Mishnah in the second parak of Maseches Avodah Zarah, where the Mishnah lists off a whole array of foods that one is not permitted to eat because somehow goyim were involved in the preparation of those foods. And again, on the list are the cheeses and the wines and the breads, etc. But the one that we're going to begin with is what's called shalokos. Shalokos means bishul, lashon bishul, food that was cooked by a non-Jew. And the first question is, well, what's wrong with it? It's almost like a monoshach. If the ingredients are not kosher, I don't need a mishnah of a dessert to tell me I can't eat it because the non-Jew cooked it. It's treif. If the ingredients are kosher, so what's wrong with it? So that's the most basic fundamental question on the mishnah. And strangely enough, the Gemara never asks it. The Gemara doesn't even ask it. Why exactly are we not eating the shlokos? The only thing that the Gemara tries to do is tries to find a source in Chumash for this prohibition, beginning the sugya, leading us to believe that this is a prohibition in HaTorah. The Gemara tries and tries and tries and finally concludes that there's really no possibility. This is not a dimmit HaTorah. This is only a dimmit Rabbanan, but it still remains open. Why? My time. Why did Chazal make this gezeira? So Rashi, at least in one place, Rashi says different things in different places, but in one place in the Sefer HaMedizara, Rashi writes the following reason. You want to know why you're not allowed to eat bishalakum? Because we're afraid that the non-Jew may have thrown in some non-kosher ingredients. That's the reason why. So the Acharonim was startled with Rashi, because it's almost like the Barashach. Like, are you watching him or you're not watching him? If you're not watching him, the non-Jew is just bringing you a piece of chicken and he's telling you, oh yeah, don't worry about it, it's kosher. Like, of course you can't eat it. You can't eat that min haTorah, because how can I ever trust anybody to say food's kosher? I come into your house and you invite me for a barbecue, you tell me that the food's kosher. Who are you? How do I know I can trust you? So we're going to hopefully talk a lot about that principle later on. That's halacha that governs, not just kashrus, but kol Torah kula, called eit echad nemen bisurin. When somebody tells you that something is kosher, you're allowed to believe them, even though they're only one witness. Somebody tells you that the soup doesn't have shatnez. It says, you know, someone used to say something. I think it says, I hope it says something. Yeah, not shatnez by some guy. One guy, two of them didn't tell me that the soup is not shatnez. How can I believe him? What happened to Apishnai made him Yochum Dovor? One person tells me that the mikvah is kosher. How can I believe them? Apishnai made him Yochum Dovor. So that's the principle called eit echad nemen bi'isurin. So when it comes to Yisur, when it comes to halachas, not in terms of monetary law, not in terms of din nefashos, when it comes to simply knowing whether something is mutar or asur, so one witness is believed. And again, we're going to talk about this later on, why that's true, how that's true, but some exceptions to that rule. But there's one thing that's definitely an exception to that rule, if the person's not Jewish. A non-Jew comes and tells you, oh, don't worry about it, everything's fine, the chicken is kosher. He's the mashgiach in the store. We spend a lot of time when we hire mashgichim, we check references to make sure that Shomer Shabbos, as that Shomer Shabbos, he can't be the mashgiach in our stores. So we have to ask and make sure 100% certain that the person is Shomer Shabbos, if he's not Jewish, obviously he's out of the question. So how could it be? The Mepharshim later, I'm asking Rashi, if you don't know what's going on in the non-Jew's kitchen, so how can you trust him? How can you trust him altogether? So when I told you can't eat the food. If you're watching there and you see that every ingredient is kosher, so what are you afraid of? So what is the reason for bishalakum? So the Acharonim explained that what Rashi must read is as follows. Now, in Ochinami, you're watching the non-Jew. You know for a fact, you got your mashkicham in there, you're watching, I know this, the chicken is kosher and the sauce is kosher and the spices are kosher, everything is kosher, the pots and pans, everything was kosher from top to bottom. But still Chazal said, don't need it. You know why? Because it's just a bad policy. If you begin to start getting into the habit of eating food that was cooked by non-Jews, something's going to go wrong down the line. Today you are watching him, but tomorrow you may not watch as carefully. Today you're locked out. Next week you may not be that lucky. And therefore it's just a bad idea, not just a bad idea, but an issum of the Rabbanon, it's a gezeirah, it's a siyag atuchas kashrus. Don't eat food cooked by Goyim. As a gezeirah, you may come to trip up and eat tray for food. So according to this understanding of Rashi, this is a gezeirah midrabbanan in the realm of kashrus, to protect the rules of kashrus. So some of you may be wondering, wait a second, I'm listening to the shiur for 10 minutes about bishalachim, and that's not why I thought bishalachim was also. I always thought bishalachim was also for a totally different reason, almost has nothing to do with hilchos kashrus. Don't feel bad, because you thought like the other day in Rashi, or you thought like Tosfos, or you thought like most of the Rishonim. So most of the Rishonim disagree with Rashi, and Rashi himself in one place almost disagrees with Rashi. Most of the other Rishonim are led by Tosfos and say that is not the reason why. Hilchos Kashrus was Hilchos Bishalakum was instituted as a siyog, as a gezeir. It's not the Araisa. The Gemara for about 10 lines thought maybe it was a deraisa, and the Gemara said it's not true, it's all the Rabbanan. But what we're trying to protect is not Hilchos Kashrus. The reason why Chazal prohibited to eat Bishalakum was to protect an entirely different area of halacha. What was that different area of halacha? The area of halacha called Los Ischatin Bam. You're not supposed to marry non-Jew. Not supposed to, it's a little bit of a soft lotion. It's Osir to marry a non-Jew. Los Ischatin Bam. You're not allowed to marry a non-Jew. So Chazal were afraid, ooh, if you're going to sit down and eat a delicious steak that was made in the non-Jewish home, you know, it's totally kosher. The mashgiach is watching the whole time. The meat's kosher, the pots, everything was new, everything was everywhere. But it's a very good steak. You'll come back next week for a meal. You'll get a little bit friendly. He may have a daughter. The daughter also knows how to make steaks. And before you know it, chalila, a terrible thing. Gezeira, what's called gezeira mishum b'no sehen. a gzeir mishim chastos. One thing may lead to another, and therefore Chazal wanted to nip the problem in the bud, and therefore Chazal said, don't eat food cooked by non-Jews to cut down on the social activity to prevent chastos. That was the reason why. According to this understanding, I didn't say Bishlacham is mutter, but it's done to Ruchus Kashas. It's kind of a strange place to begin learning the Sugas Ruchus Kashas because it's done to Kashas, but we'll see. That statement may be a little bit too overboard, what I just said. So, Bein Lefi Rashi, Bein Lefi Tosfos, Bishlacham is not also Minatorah. The Gemara concludes it's not Minatorah, it's Midirabonin. It's coming to protect something. According to Rashi, it's coming to protect Ruchus Kashas, proper. According to Tosfos, it's coming to protect Ruchus Chastas. So, this is going to be a theme that's going to repeat itself in many of the other Macholi Akob. Hopefully over the next couple of weeks and months we'll discuss when we get to samyein of wine of non-Jews, potentially the bread of non-Jews, that there is this underlying principle in Chazal that we really, really want to try to stop chasnas. So I'm going to ask a question that may sound a little bit startling. Why are we like so opposed to chasnas? Why do we make so many gezeiros? Please don't misquote me on this one. What's so terrible? What's the issue exactly? What is that terrible issue of chasnas that we're so concerned with that we have half of the chelik beis of Yeradeya dedicated to dinim derabanan, foods we can't eat. We can't drink the wine, we can't eat the chicken, and we can't eat the bread. So many things that we can't do. Gezeiros chatu chasnas, and what is so terrible about chasnas? So I went a little bit of over dramatization before. It was on purpose. And I said, Gevalt, Moses Chatebom, Shteit in the Chumash, you're not allowed to marry Goyim, Moses Chatebom. Everybody knows that. I mean, hopefully everybody knows that pasuk, but not everybody knows that's what the pasuk means. So if you open up Parshas Maschana, and you look at the end of Parshas Maschana, where the pasuk says, Moses Chatebom, it's very clear that the pasuk is talking about the Jews about to enter into Eretz Yisrael, and they're about to meet all the Zayin Umos. And the Torah is saying, those are not such good shidduch prospects. Los eschatimam, don't marry into the Zayin Umos. So come some Tanoim and say, that's what the Torah is saying. Los eschatimam, don't marry into the Zayin Umos. Someone who's not from the seven nations, not outright blatant, these terrible pagan idolaters of old, doesn't say that in the Chumash, at least in the phrase Los eschatimam. Other Tanoim say no. Other Tanoim say, but the Torah does say it's following Los eschatimam, the Torah says, why shouldn't you marry the non-Jews? Because they're going to lead you astray, they're going to lead you astray, your children astray, you're all going to become Ovdei Avodah Zarah, as history told us. If they just open up Sefer Melachim, you see what happened to everybody's Rishon. So if you marry into the non-Jews, what's going to happen is you're going to end up becoming Ovdei Avodah Zarah. So other Tanaim say, the Torah is telling us, although the Torah is speaking specifically about the seven umos of Eretz Yisrael, because that's who Moshe Ben was talking to. He's talking about Klai Yisrael entering into Eretz Yisrael. But Kiyasi El Rabbos Kol Masirim, it goes across the board. It doesn't make a difference whether you marry Chiti Knaini Girgoshi, or you marry somebody else from another nation. It doesn't matter. To marry a non-Jew is awesome in a Torah because Los Eschatim. So that's one issue. Then the Gemara Masechet Avodah Zarah has a whole array of other potentially surim. Bola Rabbis Kiroi Pogimbo, and other potentially surim, the Araisas and the Rabbonans. Gemara throws the book at you in Sefer Brachot of Edizara, why Chastos is terrible, 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 terrible. Just in case you thought it wasn't so terrible, you can open the Sefer Ezra, that's a Sefer, the Ksuvim, the end of Nach, that also speaks about the terrible, terrible Nisyonis that occurred. It's a tricky thing I said, because there's an Ezra and there's a Nehemiah, but Nehemiah doesn't really exist. It's part of Sefer Ezra, we'll leave that for another time. So the Psukim describing terrible, terrible things that occurred in the beginning of Bayashenu when the Jews fell back into the practice of intermarriage. So intermarriage has always been a total, complete disaster. The Rambam has a fascinating comment about chasnas, about intermarriage, which almost sets the stage for our discussion. The Rambam, in Hilchos Yisurim B, it talks about the surim of intermarriage, potentially surim deraisen, potentially surim derabanan. It's a terrible gefelech, it's horrible, miserable. But then the Rambam makes an interesting observation. The Rambam says, "Al yehi oven zekal be'enecha." Says the Rambam, "Don't think that this avera is lenient." Why would a person think this? Because if a person's a real lamdan, and you start to get the ball rolling, you may start to figure out, "Hey, wait a second." Misa's based in, it's not really. And Kore's the very safe from the Kabbalah. So one could argue that, in a pure halachic scale, Chilul Shabbos is more chomer. on a pure halachic scale, some of the Gilei Arayos may be more chomer. So one could almost walk away with the attitude that, well, you know, it's not so, I'm not saying it's good, it's not so bad. So the Rambam is a fascinating insight. The Rambam writes that Al Yavam Zekal Be'Necha, Aval, says the Rambam, there's something about chasnos that no other aveir has. Not even Eish Azish, not even Gilei Arayos, not even the worst, Arayos HaChemurus B'Yoseh, says the Rambam, you know what chasnos has? Ram says it's molded bein le'avodah zarah. That with all the other arayos in the Torah, as terrible as they are, your child's Jewish. Maybe a mom's is Jewish. It's kedushas Yisrael. Mom's also is kedushas Yisrael. Said the person violates chasdos, your child's not Jewish. You're molded bein to another religion. You bring another avodah zarah into the world. So says the Rambam, there's something about this aveir of chasdos that is so profound, that is so horrific, that now we understand. And now we understand Pasakam. And now we understand Stabienu. And now we understand we have all these Gezeiros and Gezeiros and Siyogim and Siyogim and Siyogim. Because Chazal was so worried because this Aveir of Chastas could either make it or break it for Klal Yisrael. Unfortunately, history has proven time and time again that when intermarriage enters into the scene, that's what the Rambam says. Molded Ben Levar Zohar basically means that's the end of this link of Judaism. It means the next generation is not Jewish. It's not his old David Zohar is not Jewish.
You don't distinguish
that
in
Mishalachim
between a
man and a woman. Oh, very good. Excellent. That's a philosophical question. Wait a second. If the reason why we're coming down so hard is because of this notion of Ali Elvin to Kavanecha, so the Nevi Huda raises a question. This is like, this discussion only belongs in the realm of pure lumbus. This doesn't get out, you know, out into the street. So the Nevi Huda says, wait a second. The Rambam Shtukul Torah maybe only applies in one direction. It applies for the man who marries a non-Jewish woman. Vice versa, not molded ben levar zarah. The Mishnah says that the child is Jewish. So we're not advocating, we're not condoning, we're not encouraging the Jewish woman to marry the non-Jewish man. That wasn't the goal of this discussion. But maybe one could argue, in a certain sense, that chumras that the Rambam is describing doesn't apply. Lamaisa does make the slightest bit of difference. Lamaisa at the end doesn't matter. Actually, Chazal, when they formulate gezeiros, they say mishum b'noseihem. That's actually the lashon of Chazal. That we're afraid that if you eat food cooked by the non-Jew, whether the non-Jew is a man or a woman, you can end up marrying a daughter of that family. I guess cooking skills maybe go be a rusha. So you're going to be attracted to the culinary skills of that home. The bottom line is, you can't marry a non-Jew. Bein male, male, female. And you can't eat food that was cooked bein by a goy, bein by a goy. Yeah, the whole thing is also. But it's just interesting that almost like a background where Chazal put so many chumras because the Isser is so chomer. Even though the Onesh per se doesn't reflect that, but this notion of the Rambam actually does reflect it. It's interesting, the Rambam has a similar lashon about the Isser of Ritzicha. The Rambam says, you know, if you think about it in terms of the Arba Mitzvos Beis Din, so Ritzicha is kind of towards the bottom of the list. But again, this is, we are not condoning. The goal of today's Shia was not to say, well, chasnas, what did you learn? You come home today from the Shia, you watch that. So what did you learn? The rabbi said that intermarriage and murder are not as bad as we thought they were. That wasn't the goal of this morning's Shia. We want people to come back next week. So Ritzicha is pretty bad also. We have to think before we start putting the Shia up online. So Ritzicha is also not pretty bad. It's horrific. It's horrible. Terrible. But if you think about it, in the hierarchy of Onshin, so remember from the Vidui at the end of Davening on Yom Kippur, Skila, Sreif, Herig, Mechenek, Skila is higher than Herig. That means Chil Shabbos, in a certain sense, is a more chomer in terms of pure onshin. Chil Shabbos is more severe than Ritzicha. So the Rambam also has the same lashon. The Rambam says, don't fool yourself, don't kid yourself to think Ritzicha, okay, not so bad. Ritzicha. Why? Because Ritzicha has something that even Chil Shabbos doesn't have. Even Avodah Zarah doesn't have. The Rambam writes that Ritzicha destroys the world. That's what he writes. It destroys society. It undermines the entire fabric of civilized society, says the Rambam. It says, so Ritzicha is the most antithetical to Bracious Molochim. The ABCs of it. We mentioned last night, Lasobra, Lashevisitzar, Kedushbrach wants there to be human beings who are alive in this world. The person goes ahead and starts killing people. So it's the antithesis of everything that Kedushbrach created in the world. So, Ein Lecha Veira Gedola Mizu. Even though the onus doesn't necessarily reflect itself, it's not always, you know, that's always so clearly discernible from the onus exactly the severity of a certain aveira. Sometimes there are other factors as well. I'm sorry,
if we show chasnos is such a, you know,
deep issue here. Why don't we find it in other areas of life? You can't employ an entrepreneur. You can't talk to an entrepreneur. You can't play better. I mean, why would you only find it in these few related items?
Right. So the answer is, I think that Chazal really understood very, very well psychologically the role that food has in people's lives. That I think we kid ourselves if we don't think that, you know, I mean, it's Baruch Hashem, it's beautiful to see everybody coming to the Shia this morning, but I think there are probably a couple of people thinking, gee, it would have been nice to have a donut and a cup of coffee here this morning. So we're not going to have it. You know, it's almost like Chazal had to walk this fine line, because on the one hand, we do live in a, with non-Jews, and even in the days of, even in the Eretz Yisrael, there were non-Jews around them. So we cannot create the society that we have absolutely zero interaction with non-Jews. On the other hand, we have to kind of keep it at that distance between we have a professional relationship but not a social relationship. So you're right, we can do business with non-Jews to some extent. There may be some limitations with that also. We can talk to them, and we should talk to them. We should be friendly with them. We should always talk about Dr. Shalom and giving them Shalom and, you know, all the things that we are required to do in our relationship with the non-Jews. But certain, you know, intimate kinds of relationships have to be stopped. And Chazal felt that food was that almost that tipping point where things begin to go sour for us in terms of relation. I think that was the psychology of Chazal. So we have really two different approaches to Bishalachot. One is a very, very Hilchos Kashrus oriented, that was Rashi's approach, and then we have Tosfos, and most of the Rishonim, and it's not Kashrus per se, it's a Gezeirah, but it now becomes Kashrus. Now, we're not allowed to eat the food. The food is not kosher, but it's not kosher for a non-Kashrus reason. Is there any real practical difference between the two? So there is a question, a very, very big Chumrah, that some Acharonim suggest. I'll preface by saying we probably don't follow this Chumrah, but the Piskachuv in the beginning of the Siman about Bishalachot makes mention of this potential Chumrah, and that is as follows. Who qualifies as a non-Jew for these purposes? Qualifies as a non-Jew? It's non-Jewish, non-Jewish. It's not a question in the Knesset who is a Jew. We know exactly who is a Jew. So one could have the following. You could have a person who technically has Kedushas Yisrael, but unfortunately, due to his actions, takes on the status of what's called Dino Ka'akum, which is a very, very loaded concept. We spoke about this many, many times in the past. But these are sugyas in the beginning of Maseches Chulin and other places where sometimes a Jew can do certain averos where he's so not in sync with the life of Torah that he takes on certain characteristics of Dino Ka'akum. What does that mean exactly? So the original context of that thing was a sugya in the beginning of Chulin about, I said, we want to talk about Shechita. We'll talk about Shechita some days. So in Hilchos Shechita, there's a din that only a Jew can check. Somebody who is dinok akum cannot check. The Shach writes in your day, he cannot check minat Torah. He's dinok akum. Or somebody who is dinok akum touches wine, also a kashrus issue, the wine becomes treif. Someone who's dinok akum, many, many halachas that govern such an individual, someone who has the status of a goy. What does that mean? What does he have to do in order to have the status of a goy? So the Gemara says as follows, in the beginning of Masech Chulin, he has to be what we call a muma l'chol ha-tarakula. He has to be somebody who doesn't observe any of the mitzvahs. Now we're going to preface by saying we are talking about people who should be keeping the mitzvahs, know about mitzvahs, who heard about Torah, who know what Torah is all about, and choose not to observe mitzvahs. There's a whole other category in halacha that the Rambam in the Chizmamrim develops about people who are also not keeping the mitzvahs, because they never heard of it, or they never were raised properly, or even the Rambam writes they may have heard about it, but it was a very foreign concept to them. They never grew up in a Torah home, so the Rambam categorizes them. They're entirely different. That's not part of our discussion right now. So right now we're talking about somebody who should know better, who did know better, and now has decided to become a mumah l'chol ha-tarakula. How do you engage whether someone's a mumah l'chol ha-tarakula? Not so. How's it work? L'chol ha-tarakula. Everybody does have aveiros. Person speaks Lashon Hara, so all of a sudden he can't be a sheikhet anymore. Person doesn't do a mitzvah, they're all the puzzle. No, that's not true. You have to be someone who's really, really off the deep end in terms of mumah l'chol ha-tarakula. So you can become a mumah l'chol ha-tarakula in one of multiple ways. One is if you're literally mamish, you just gave up everything. One, the Gemara singles out several aveiros that by doing them, you're so off the charts. This aveira is so fundamental, it's so basic to everything we stand for. If you can't do that, if you're not keeping that mitzvah, so we assume that you're probably not going to keep other mitzvahs as well. And even if once in a while you do keep the other mitzvahs, then you can't be trusted vis-a-vis those other mitzvahs. What aveiros tip you over into that category? So the Gemara singles out two of them. One is aveiros zara. A guy worships idols. Imagine guys who say like this. Yeah, I come to shul every morning, I put on tefillin, talis and tefillin, I learn daf yomi, you know, I keep kosher, I check my suits for shatnez, but I'm an idol worshiper. what's the done? No. Avodah Zarah is not like one of the 613 mitzvahs. If you do that, yeah, the game's over. You're a mum l'chotar kul, you can't shech manatar, you trick the wine up, finish, end of the story. Then the Gemara says, someone who is a mechal Shabbos before Hesia, someone who publicly desecrates Shabbos, is also, I can't say that I keep kosher, I do this, I do that, but I'm mechal Shabbos. It doesn't work that way. Chilul Shabbos is so fundamental to everything we stand for. If you're a public desecrator of Shabbos, so then the game's over. Then you're considered to be a mumar l'chol tarkulu. We spoke a lot about this. What exactly does that mean? What does that nuance mean? Again, even someone who knows about Shabbos, is it really public? Everybody knows about it. Is he a little bit embarrassed? There's a famous story of Mishkas Erevin where somebody was carrying on Shabbos in a place where there was no Erev, and he passed by Rabbi Yudin Nasiya. Rabbi Yudin Nasiya was Rabbi Yudin Nasiya's grandson. He passed by Rabbi Yudin Nasiya and he was very embarrassed. He said, the chief rabbi sees him carry. So he starts to finagle, pushing it, shoving it into his pocket or something the rabbi shouldn't see. So Rabbi Yudin Nasiya said to his shamas, he said, Baruch Hashem, that person is not a Mechal Shabbos for Hesia. And he says he's not a Mechal Shabbos. He's a Mechal Shabbos, but not for Hesia, because he's embarrassed. He doesn't want people to see him. So that's also a mile. It's also a darga. Such a person, technically, I don't know what I want him to be my shaykhid, but technically, he's not considered to be Dino Kemumar. So you have a lot of people like that. Sometimes a person comes, you know, a person should know better. He grew up from, he knows he's not allowed to drive on Shabbos, and he's driving on Shabbos. But when he comes to the family simcha and the shul, he'll park around the corner instead of in front of the, he won't pull up into the driveway of the shul. That's just because he didn't buy the parking spot. He won't pull up on Shabbos and, you know, he'll pull around the corner. He's embarrassed. People shouldn't see him. That's a milo. That's something. It's not great. We got a long way to go, but it's definitely a step in the right direction. But what if you have someone who's mamish dino ka'akam, he's a mumma lagam and the chol davar, and he's the chef. He's the cook. Is that a problem of bishul akum or not? So is he called an akum? Not called an akum for these purposes. So the Pesach Tshuva quotes, and maybe it depends on the following. If the reason for bishul akum is shema yachilenu dvarim asurim, we're afraid that he's going to trip you up and feed you treif, even on this time you're watching him, but next time he may feed you treif, so then even though he's not a goy, he's Jewish, he has kedushas rol to him, but at the end of the day, he's a kind of a guy who we cannot trust at all in the kitchen. And therefore, according to this understanding, shema yachilenu dvarim asurim would be a problem, and therefore any food cooked by the non-frum, again, I mean this in a very, very, you know, with quotation marks, the non-frum, quote-unquote, Jew, if he's dino ka'akum, then the food is treif because of bishul akum. According to the other opinion, according to Tosfos, the isser is, you're not allowed to marry his daughter. Well, nice, you're allowed to marry his daughter. If he has a daughter who's a baal shuvah, and she becomes frum, and she's shomer shabbos, you're allowed to marry him, chetchila. So the fact that he's dino ka'akum, that doesn't make a break the status. Even if him and his wife are dinum ka'akum, that doesn't, vis-a-vis Kedushas Yisrael, people who are mumrim, who have a child, the child is still kosher levav kahal, still completely Jewish. So the Acharonim write that if Rashi's reason is right, then you have to reevaluate the whole sugya of bishul akum vis-a-vis non-frum people. You have to ask yourself, gevalt, is this person a shem mechal shabbos pehesya? Is this person a mum l'chol tarkula? Is he a tirik shenishpa? Is he not? You have to go assess every single Jew that's cooking for you and see, just because they're Jewish doesn't save bishul akum problems. According to Tosfos, the discussion does get off the ground. I think that most of us are mekel on the shaila. I think in Eretz Yisrael, pretty much the approach is to be mekel on the shaila. So, you know, in Eretz Yisrael, you can have this shaila. It's not a crazy shaila. You have someone who's got working in the back of a restaurant, he's doing the cooking, and he knows exactly what Shabbos is, and he grew up from, but now he's a nebuch, he went off the derech, he's mechal shabbos for hesya. So we don't label his food as being bishul akum. I think the minhag ha'olam is to be mekel. The reason why, not everybody's mekel, there are some poskim with machlokes, I think the reason why most of us are mekel on the shaila is for this very reason, that we paskin that the real, honest to goodness reason for bishul akum is not like Rashi. The emes lamita reason we paskin is, it's like Tosfos, that's bishum chasnos, and therefore chasnos is irrelevant, and the yisad doesn't. So everything we're going to continue with from this point is going to assume, like Shitas HaTosfos, that the reason for bishul akum is not kashrus oriented, it's chasnus oriented. Which led the Rishonim to pose a very, very fascinating question. What if the person who's cooking for you doesn't have a daughter? The gezeirah was mishum benoseihem, this individual doesn't have a daughter. Now, that's kind of a funny question. He doesn't have a daughter now, maybe his wife will have a daughter next year. So. No. This person will never have a daughter. You know why he'll never have a daughter? Because he's never going to get married. You know why he's never going to get married? Think back to the Middle Ages. Because he took a vow of celibacy, I think is the term. He's the galach. He's the priest. He's the pope. He's the whatever. He's not getting married. He's not the he's the hierarchy of the church. He's not getting married. So comes Rabbi Shimon and say, "Ooh, he's not getting married." Gaval kakula. Listen to this one. The person, the regular non-Jew next door, you know, who's got five daughters, you know, his food is off limits. But if the galach and down, the priest did that, he cooks for you, then everything's hunky dory, everything's great. So the Rishon said, "Nah, come on, no, that's a little bit too much." You know why? Two magic words. The two magic words govern many, many dinim. The Rabbanan called lo plug. Lo plug means that in dinim the Rabbanan, very often Chazal instituted that we have to almost make a little bit of, you know, universal, you know, across the board. You can't start making exceptions. Does the reason apply? Does the reason not apply? There's a certain degree of lo plug that was instituted by Chazal very, very often into Gezeres, but otherwise, it's impossible. For me, it's going to be us, and for him, it's going to be mutter. For this guy, it's going to be us, and this guy's going to be mutter. The whole thing, you can't have a dirabon, and you can't have too many exceptions to a rule. So we know, we live our lives sometimes with low plugs. We're well aware in many, many different areas where sometimes we have to make low plugs. You know, sometimes people come screaming, you know, at the rabbi, at the school principal, to something, you know, come on, it doesn't make sense for this case, it doesn't make sense. The answer is, you're right. It doesn't make sense in this case, but we live in a community. So sometimes you have to make rules that may not necessarily fit for one person, but it's a low plug. One of the most famous examples of a low plug that Chazal made in Tkiya Shofar, we spent a lot of time talking about this last year. Rosh Hashanah falls out on Shabbos, so Chazal made a Gezerah. Don't blow the Shofar. Can you imagine the degree? Can you imagine the aim of a year when Chazal made this Gezerah, not to blow Shofar on Shabbos? It must have been shaking. Tkiya Shofar. The whole year we sit around, we wait for the Kiyah Shofar. And it says in the Machzor, to be admitted on the Sabbath. Admitted on the Sabbath? Why? Shem Yavirena Dalan Hamas Bishus Rabbim. You may end up carrying. So the guy's sitting in shul and scratching his head. The rabbi announces, okay, everybody turn to what do we do instead? To Yikur Purkon, and then we skip the Ashrei, and we're skipping the Kiyah Shofar. So the guy said, "Rabbi, one second, you're supposed to blow shofar now." Rabbi, "No, you don't blow shofar. You know why? Because we're afraid you're going to carry the shofar." Rabbi says, "I just carried my machzor to shul. I just carried my talis to shul. My wife just pushed her baby carriage. Just stuck the kids in the groups. We're all carrying it. Rabbi, we have an eruv. What are you afraid of? We have an eruv." So the answer is, "You're right. You know, in this community they have an eruv, but not every community has an eruv." So Chazal made a gezeira that we have to speak for Klal Yisrael. So you can't have it that the shul, the communities that have Erevin, they can blow shofar. The other ones get across the board, Shema Yavirena Dal Hashem Sarab. There's a gezeira, like plug, and that's the way it has to be. So again, you have to be Chazal. This is part of, this is what Chazal do all day. They sit in the Lishkas HaGosis and try to figure out how to make gezeiras. So very often Chazal said, gezeiras a low plug. So come, the Rishonim said that you can't say that, well, I'm going to eat the priest's chicken because there's no gezeira. No, it's a low plug. So it's because of low plug that got a whole ball rolling in terms of Hilchos Bishul Akam. Some great ideas, some phenomenal kulas that would have changed the landscape of Hilchos Bishul Akam also got blown out of the water because of those two magic words called low plug. So one of them was an issue that Tosfos in Maseches Avodah Zarah raises. This would have been the best kula. If we would have paskin like this, maybe sometimes we do a little bit, but if we would have passed like this, so we probably could have skipped to Chazbos B'chov now. Bishlach would be over for us. Tosfos quotes Maseches Avodah Zarah from one of the Balei Tosfos, Rabbeinu Avram, that said that he thinks that Bishlach only applies in a non-Jewish home. If you're invited by the non-Jew to their house, even though you're watching all the food and the non-Jews are working in the kitchen, he's working with his daughters and his wife, they're preparing this beautiful steak for you, that's a concern of, you know, all the concerns that we have. But if it's happening in your home, the non-Jew is coming and cooking in your house. So first of all, Tosfos says, what's the Shema Yachileno Dvarim Tamei? You're there, you're watching. So the Rashi's fear is probably doesn't really exist. Chasnas. Very, 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 very unlikely that's going to lead to chasnas. If it's in the goyish home, that's going to be a real social interaction. It's going to be in your home, that's less of a concern. So Ben Avram says he thinks that all bishalakam taking place in a Jewish home is permissible. Wow, those frantic calls to the rabbi when you come home and you realize that the babysitter just heated up your pasta for you, just cooked your pasta for you. according to this day and tell you everything's good, no problem. Guess what? A Jewish home is only a Jewish home. I would have been a Jewish restaurant and a Jewish shul and a Jewish catering establishment. Everything's one though. There's no way that we can just take Mishlachim and toss it out the window according to this opinion. So Rabbi Tam disagreed. Rabbi Tam said, sorry, we can't be lenient for two words. You know why? Lo plug. We can't start that kula that if the food was cooked here, it's okay, and if the food was cooked here, it's not okay, and if the food was cooked here, it is okay, not okay. Lo plug across the board. And therefore, Rabbi Tam's view has prevailed, the halacha. Therefore, Mishlachim still does speak to us. All the Pesach Shulchan Aruch assume the halacha like Rabbi Tam. Except sometimes this first sheet will be pulled out of the hat in very, very extenuating circumstances. We'll talk about that as we go on. But we don't really follow it because of those two magic words, lo plug. It is because of those two magic words, lo plug, that also led to us not accepting another great kula. If this kula would have been accepted, then everything would have been great. This would have been made life so much easier, and we could have talked about a different topic next Sunday. And that is the following suggestion. Some of the Rishonim suggest a phenomenal kula in Ochus Bishlachim. Let's go down the line of Tosfos here. The way we assume that Bishlachim was primarily there to prevent, you know, too much socialization, etc., things of that nature. When does that make sense? That makes sense when it's a non-Jewish friend, non-Jewish neighbor, trying to get a little bit closer to you. That makes sense. What if it's a non-Jewish employee? Someone who... It's a very business kind of a relationship. Said, I hired them as my chef, or they're a babysitter watching my kids. Said, there's no relationship, zero. There's no social relationship. I'm not going to their house. They're not sitting there. I'm not inviting them for a meal. Zero. This is pure business. There's no pleasure. This is pure business. So one opinion the Rishonim says, guess what? Maybe there's no Mishalachim under those circumstances. Maybe there's no Gezeir Mishum Chastas. So all the other Shem say, Gavalt, no. You know why? Not because the facts are wrong. The Taka is no chas. There's no concern of chasdus. You know why? Look, you can't commit Allah Chazal, cannot set up parameters and guidelines of Allah in such a matter that this kind of non-Jew is okay, and that kind of non-Jew is okay, and that one, yes, no, maybe so. If he's not Jewish, called Bishalachim. Whether it's a Jewish home, a non-Jewish home. Whether it's a worker, whether it's a friend, a neighbor, acquaintance, it's called Bishalachim. So the approach that we're taking at the end of today's shir is very, very chumrah, very, very machmer. We started out by presenting Bishalachim as Dirabanan. We evaluated Rashi and Tosfos, two understandings of Bishalachim. We threw in a good nafkamina for good luck. And now we presented possibilities of maybe almost chiseling away at this issur. And we just came to the realization that the Rishon refused to do so. Lo plug governs all of Hilchos Bishalachim. This week was the Chumrah. Maybe I should have given the Kulas the first week, because you give the Kulas, then they encourage people to come back. I give too many Chumrahs, no one's going to come back. Or maybe the other way around. If I give a lot of Kulas, no one wants to come back, because they just like what they heard, and they don't want, in case I change my mind. And now I give all the Chumrahs, guys are plotting to come back next week, because wait a second, the rabbi's got to change something. So hang in there, there are going to be a few Kulas coming also.
And breakfast.
And breakfast also, okay. But we didn't even decide the breakfast kosher yet, but we're assuming that, okay. So hang in there for both parts of the show. Yeah.